Blog Talk Radio.
Desperate House Witches. I am Dorian Wallace, joined as always by Miss Giggle Pants over there, Raina Starr. How you doing, Mama?
Okay, so here's the bad thing. It is now a Pavlovian response to our music. Apparently,
yeah.
I can't help myself anymore.
It's fine.
I hear that music, and it's that unmute, between the unmute button and the start of the show. I don't know why I find that so funny, but I do. Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
It don't matter.
Forget about it.
It don't matter. Forget it. It don't matter. Do your shout out, and I got a couple things to say.
All right. Jessica and Steven, if you listen, I'm going to send y'all a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips and probably a little bit of wind today. Love you guys. Okay.
Wait a minute. Is that breaking wind? Is that a special kind of wind? What kind of wind are you sending?
I don't know. That hurricane that is, luckily, by the time it reaches them up in the far north, will be very much dissipated and will probably be a light breeze. But I do want to wish everybody well. If you're listening and you are in the path, if they have told you to evacuate, get your ass out of there. Seriously, y'all be safe. We're thinking about you.
Get out of there. That's right.
Yeah, get out of there.
Get out. Okay. Okay. So if you're new to Desperate House Witches, welcome. And I know a lot of you are this week. So hooray for our new listeners. Let's have some applause. Yay. Thank you, new listeners, for coming on board. We like seeing new people. Welcome to the crazy house. Okay. So... if you are new, again, welcome. Desperate House Witches is not a G, PG, or an R-rated show, not even an X. It's not going to happen. So, if foul language, body parts, bodily functions, gross stuff, sex stuff, nasty talk, because I got a dirty mouth, if that offends you, too fucking bad, because that's how I roll, bitches. Okay, so shout out to... our fantastic sponsors. Sponsor number one, The Angry Cauldron. The Angry Cauldron, for all of your metaphysical needs. They do international shipping as well as domestic. And our other amazing sponsor, the fantastic Dorothy Morrison with Wicked Witch Studios. More applause for our sponsors. Yay, sponsors. Check out wickedwitchstudios.com, theangrycauldron.com, and get your witching on, because they got some great shit. Okay, so it's been an interesting week.
Do tell.
Okay, so last week, if you were listening, Auntie Raina had an issue with a coworker who was stinking up the place. And when I say lighten up the place, I don't mean lit up like a Christmas tree. I'm talking lit up like Chernobyl. The man be smelling bad. Ooh, it isn't cute. So the person's supervisor was supposed to be having a conversation in depth about why we need to fix the situation. I don't know why, but the conversation did not happen. I am not pleased. this person was supposed to go do some work for me, and I put my foot down and said, fucking no, I cannot have this gentleman in front of my clients, scaring people, evacuating buildings, not a good thing. So that situation still has not been handled. Oh, wow. Here's the problem. When you've left a room and there is still a cloud in the room that says you have been there, we all have a problem. Please don't light a match. I don't know what will explode. It's kind of frightening. So there was that. That wasn't fun. Let's see. What is? So there's this big-ass storm. You'd have to live under a rock not to know about Hurricane Matthew. We have some friends who live in Florida, the Mullins. We love you guys. We are very glad you're safe. Apparently, they found casualties in the yard. Some avocados got sacrificed for the greater good. So there are chips and guacamole for dinner tonight. So fair play to them
best
making use of. I'm telling you, amazing. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, that's her name, has repeatedly pleaded with people to get the hell out, batten down the hatches if you're staying, but don't call her if you get into trouble because she told you, dumbass, to leave. Leave. So let's see. Here in North Carolina, Governor Pat McCrory, always a bastion of restraint, has already called for emergency services for North Carolina, even though shit hasn't happened yet. And I believe we will be lucky and it won't happen. But thank you to everybody who has reached out and said, are you guys okay? We are okay. I don't believe the brunt is going to hit until tomorrow. We will continue to update you on our Facebook page when shit falls from the sky at an alarming rate. So don't worry, you will be in the loop on what is happening with us. So, all right, I discovered this week that I have to come clean. I have a confession that I have to make.
Uh-oh.
Yes, I am an addict. I admit I am an addict. Uh-huh. It is an unfortunate circumstance, but I do have to come clean right now. And my addiction is, get ready for it, lipstick.
Lipstick?
Oh, lipstick.
Cool.
Lipstick.
Could always be worse addictions.
There can, but here's the thing. If you're a woman of any age who likes makeup, I have been a woman who likes makeup at every age. And I am looking for this holy grail. And I don't know if other women do this. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I am constantly looking for that holy grail lipstick, that perfect color, that perfect texture that makes me look, I don't know, 20 years younger. I have no clue what I am trying to achieve by this. All I know is that every week I look to see what the new colors are, and I have to get a couple for myself to add to my lipstick collection. Now, fortunately, thanks to a certain witch we both know, instead of buying Chanel and Dior and the expensive shit, she has turned me on to the local Sephora product. And I'm like, cheaper lipstick, very nice quality. I don't know why I'm doing this commercial, but I just felt like I had to unburden myself of this addiction. I am a lipstick junkie. I love lip color. I don't know what my problem is. Woe is me, the problems of the modern witch in corporate America. Maybe it's not just me, but who the hell knows? So I feel better now that I've gotten that off my chest. And there you go. I don't need a sugar daddy to buy me lipstick. I'm perfectly capable of supporting my addiction on my own. But God help me if I ever turn my fancy to eyeshadow, because then it will be all over. These things.
Oh my God! Yeah, there are so many colors.
There's so many colors, and most of them are. Here's the thing: you can buy blue eyeshadow still. I don't know why that's still a thing. I had heard it was outlawed. Apparently not. I am still seeing blue eyeshadow. Ladies, I'm begging you, if it is not a dark blue used in the crease only, tastefully please, don't wear it. That sky blue, baby blue, puke blue, baby blanket blue, stop the blue.
Yeah.
It looks trash. Unless that's the look you're going for. And for some people, that is a thing. So please, try not to, though. It's really hideous. It makes you look like you've been crying.
Yeah.
It's a very sad shade. And really the best shades for anybody to wear are taupe, brown, dark green. That's about fucking it. Pink eyeshadow makes you look like you have pink eye. Red eyeshadow, I've seen this bullshit. It makes you look like sick. Stop it. It's every day is not fucking Halloween. Even though you think it should be. Please stop with the red eyeshadow. And, oh, the glitter. Why is glitter back again? I don't understand this.
You know, interesting segue into glitter that
okay.
I have seen posted a couple times on my feed the last, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 days, something like that. And, apparently, they're now putting glitter in grout. It's actually kind of pretty. I'm not big with makeup or jewelry, but I do like shiny. And I'd be like sitting there staring at my wall if I had that stuff. I'd be like, oh, it's so pretty. I just want to stare at it.
Yes. I could see my sister re-grouting her entire bathroom just so she has glitter.
And kitchen.
No.
And kitchen.
And kitchen. Yeah, call me when you're done. I'll come look.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. My breath will not be held during this process, just so you know.
Yeah. No, my husband would never let me do that. Are you kidding? He'd be like,
Less? I would be like, bitch, please. I am here all day. You are not. The walls need to be the way I want to look at them. Seriously?
Yeah, but, you know, that is true.
Yeah. I mean, who's in the house all the time? That'd be you. Who's cooking the meals? That'd be you. So I'm saying to that, bitch, please. It's going to be the way. If I were you, it would be the way I want it. That's all.
For the most part, it is, but this is new. I'm like, I want rose gold.
In my grout. Not necessarily all over my walls, but I want it in my grout. My grout. Oh, ridiculous. I mean, I think it's hilarious, quite frankly. If I ever see it in person, I might actually like it, but somebody else has to test that shit out for me first. Truly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, if you do, like I said, call me. I'll come and look. But no, I ain't got that kind of patience. I don't have that kind of wherewithal, nor do I even have that desire. But if you do, boo-boo, do you. Go ahead all day long. I will be there to support you and love you, no matter what it is. I did forget to mention my other obsession. And it's kind of bad also, not as bad as lipstick. It is, however, Dorothy Marsden's Wicked Witch Studios Hoodoo Coffee.
Oh,
I went through the first bag last week, okay? Yeah. Monday, like, hitting my wrist, hitting my arm to the vein, contacting Ms. Morrison saying, Madam, please, I need a new fix. Can I have some more of that amazing, delicious coffee? And she was kind enough to sell me two more bags, sent them to me immediately. I have them for tomorrow morning. I am so excited about this coffee. I am telling you, it is my product of the. It's my product of the week, week two. My product of the week, Hoodoo beans, the Hoodoo Mojo beans, the coffee beans. Get to Wicked Witch Studio. I am not a coffee snob in the sense of, you know, liking coffee as much as a lot of other people do. This coffee is part of my life. It made me laugh. It made me cry. It is now part of me. I love it. I can't do without it. It is the best coffee ever. I'm just saying, if you are a coffee aficionado, hire us over to that website and get you some damn coffee. She's got the medium roast, which is the Hoodoo, and she's got a dark roast as well, Black Magic. If that's your deal, try it, get it, love it. Tell me about it later. You're going to thank me. I'm just saying. Other important announcement for those of you who have an iPhone and you have just done an update on your iPhone, and one of our Sister Witch friends clued me in, and I posted it on my page before airtime. If you have done the recent update, go to your settings, go to cellular data, and then scroll all the way down to where it says Wi-Fi Assist. You will find that your Wi-Fi Assist is on. Turn that bitch off. That is how they are hitting you for extra fees and using extra data. It is supposed to boost things for you. Yeah, honey, these people are sneaky. Sneaky. If you did the recent update, I'm telling you, if you have, yeah, but I have to have the iPhone for business. If you have an iPhone and you've done the update, double check the Wi-Fi Assist, and turn that bitch off. You don't need them using all that extra data to make your signal stronger. If your signal is not strong enough, move to another part of the house. It's cheaper because you're going to wind up getting hit with a bill for data that you were not expecting.
That's sneaky.
It is sneaky. It's very fucking sneaky, and if she hadn't posted that article, I wouldn't have known anything about it because, believe it or not, most of your IT departments, if you have a cell phone through your employer that's an iPhone, they don't even know it. So I'm going to hit IT up to this classic information on Monday. Everybody turn that shit off, because they're going to hit you with fees for data that you do not know where they're coming from. Now you know. Do it now. Thank me later. I'm just saying, I'm saving you money. That's how we roll. Just needed to get all of that shit off my chest. It's been a crazy week, but a good week. I'm still waiting to see what happens with the information that Mr. Jade Sol Luna gave us about the energy patterns and things happening. But so far, so good. We're rolling okay on my end. Are you doing okay, Mama?
Yeah, I'm actually doing fantastic. I don't know. It's been kind of a slow week, but like yesterday, I had to keep little man home from school because the night before, you know, he had been complaining that, you know, his tooth was kind of aching. So I was like, okay, we need to get you in the dentist. And, you know, my husband looked at it and said it looked like it was cracked. So, of course, I go into panic mode. You know, like internally, I'm not one to panic on the outside. But I was like, oh, God, let me see. I said, you know, that might be a baby tooth. That's awfully small. I think that's a baby tooth, but regardless, it does look cracked. We need to take him in. And, yeah, he had five.
Wow.
Two of them were popped off yesterday.
Yay.
Yeah, there was two teeth on the top, or three teeth on the top. One, his dentist told him to, you know, kind of keep wiggling at it, and it'll come loose. And then there's two molars on the bottom. I was like, she's like, I don't think I've ever seen this many in one sitting, but that's, you know, I was like, hey, they're not cracked. I'm good. You know, it's like, yeah,
yeah,
pop those babies off. We're good. So, yeah, I was very happy.
Is he okay? Did it hurt?
Yeah. The one hurt a little bit. He was squeezing my hands really hard and kind of, like, I was like, could you please just hurry up and pop it? Like, you're hurting my kid. But no, he was a trooper. I got to say, both my kids, I have been so lucky because both of them have always been excellent at the doctor and the dentist. I have never had an issue. Never had an issue with them taking their medicine. I'm like, okay, I can deal with the rest of the boy stuff, but, you know, you kind of feel guilty because you're like, okay, I know you don't want to get hurt, but you kind of have to go through this. Oh, but I don't want to miss you. Yeah, it tears me up more than it does them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree.
You know? But, yeah, he's good. He's like back to his bouncy self. So I'm like, he was grumpy this week. I mean,
well, fuck
grumpy.
Yeah. Well, when your teeth hurt, I mean, they say tooth pain and foot pain are like the worst kinds of pain. And I'm pretty grumpy when I have a toothache, so I identify with that. I understand.
Yeah.
You know. It sucks. It's uncomfortable.
Now.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. What else is going on with you, Chiquina?
Nothing much. Oh, I did have an idea.
Uh-oh.
And I posted it with our post today. And I would love to hear from the listeners. If you, you know, if you find me on Facebook, private message me, or just, you know, message me through Desperate House Witches or post on the page. I don't care. I was thinking of having a raffle, a cool, like, grab bag. You remember a couple years ago I did a grab bag?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I kind of picked out magical items, and I kind of, you know, I went to the winner's page, and I kind of looked at her tastes and everything, but I was thinking of doing that. And setting up a button that, you know, okay, $1 a ticket. The more tickets we sell, the bigger the bag. Or
she said that.
A really big prize. Yes, I did say that. So I don't know if you guys are keen to the idea, because I not to brag on myself, but I have pretty good taste. So you will get some awesome stuff, I promise.
If you guys
would be into that, let me know.
I do have to say, my sister does have awesome taste. Every year my sister gives me something really nice that I really, really like. So, and you all know I like some stuff. So she gives good stuff, I do have to say.
You will not be
disappointed. Yes, yes, yes. I won't go into what it is she gives me. Suffice it to say, she gives me shit I like. That's a family joke, so sorry. Anyway, so let's just explain that tonight we have the amazing Talisman Govanin coming on.
Yay.
In just a little bit, and Sis is going to excuse herself because politics is not happening for her right now. I understand it. I dig it. But it is my thing.
I'm just so over it.
I know
I
you
really
are.
Am.
But because
years.
She knows. Because she knows that I'm not, she indulges me and lets me take over the show. Watch out while the insane one takes the asylum tonight. glad y'all could be with me for this. It's going to be fun. So,
yeah.
And we're just a couple of minutes out from him showing up, are we not?
Yep, about 5 minutes. So
yeah.
He usually shows up a few minutes early. Why, are you trying to get rid of me? I'm kidding.
I would never try. You're so silly.
I'm
okay.
Funny.
Yeah, we're all fucking funny in this family. We're a barrel of laughs, in case you hadn't noticed. Especially our brother is pretty funny, too. How is he doing?
He's doing good. I was so happy for him. He will be here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
He's still not getting the room till we're done, but he had 5 whole days off.
In a row?
I haven't seen him for 5. Yeah, in a row.
Wow.
He said he planned on getting a couple bottles of whiskey and planting his ass in front of the Xbox. I was like, you do it. Do it or no, he switched to a PlayStation. He's like, he borrowed one of your older nephew's games to play for a couple days. So I'm like, have fun. Don't let anybody fly you off that couch.
We are a pack of children in this family. It does not matter what the age is of any of us. Speaking as the eldest, I have to tell you, I'm as childish can get. I do not care. I do not care if you judge me. It will not stop me. I am a big baby. I like having fun, and that is the name of the game. So I'm constantly having a party in my own head, in case you hadn't noticed.
And you know, that's one thing, speaking of childish, and I will hang my head. No, you know what? I'm not going to hang my head in shame, because I don't care. I like doing this. But we have a place here called Monkey Joe's, which is a giant indoor playroom for kids, but it's nothing but bouncy houses. I get very excited with bouncy houses, but I can't go in them unless I kidnap somebody else's child from now on.
Why?
You know, there's a benefit to being short.
Yeah.
But I can't get away with it anymore now because I have a tattoo behind my ear and my hair is short, so I can't hide it. But yeah, they would never kick me out of the bouncy houses, because I would go in there with the kids, you know, and like, oh no, I'm just supervising. If they caught me. But little man is too tall now.
Oh no.
You have to be 5 foot and under, you know, and I'm 5'3". So they would kind of look at me, you know, every once in a while, but I usually had a kid with me. Yeah, he can't go in them anymore. So that means I can't go in anymore. I'm so sad.
Your bouncy house days are behind you.
Well,
I'm so sorry.
Until Dahlia down the street throws a party. So, like, during the summer, there's usually a bouncy house, and we always go on it. We need to get you over, and we need to have some cocktails and go playing in the bouncy house.
That, could you imagine my old ass in a bouncy house? That would be hilarious. We could sell tickets. That would be funny.
That would be
as
so much
shit.
Fun.
It would be shit. Bringing down the
God.
Bouncy house. Oh, no.
Nah. We won't bring it up. We're not as rough as the kids, so. It's yeah, she had, what was the last? No, it was the one before last. There was, stairs, that inflatable stairs, which that was interesting trying to get my fat ass up there. But, it has a rope that you can pull yourself with. And then you slide down. It's so awesome. I'm yes. Bouncy house.
Bouncy house.
It was
a wonderful thing. Bouncy house.
I know. I hear they have, it's not a bouncy house, but it's an inflatable pub. And I'm trying to figure out if that would, A, fit in our yard, B, if they actually sell them, and C, how much of a bank do I have to rob to get one?
Are you kidding me? They have such a thing as an inflatable pub. Really?
They do.
We
I'll have to find the link for you.
We must investigate.
I know. I'm you know what? While we're waiting for Taliesin to come on, I'm going to inflate. There it is. It's pop a pub. Yeah, I'm gonna smack you later.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh my god.
How big is it?
They're
huge. They're
huge? It's huge.
They're huge.
It's huge. I'm gonna send you the link, and then I'm gonna post it on the page just so they know what I'm talking about. But oh my god, they are so cool looking, and they have different ones. I am super stoked about this now. So if anybody wants to buy me one, that would be an awesome Christmas present.
Well, do you buy it or do you rent it?
I don't know. I would buy one. Oh, yeah, it says rentals, pub rentals. I will find one that I can buy, damn it. But they're so cute.
How much is the rental?
Let me see. Oh, God, $200 a day? But they do sell them. There's, a couple different styles. Oh, my God, those are expensive. $13,000, $16,000, $30,000. You could buy a trailer for that. Or
a
new car.
Yeah, but it's not a pub. Well.
Yeah, that's true. Or
you could buy part of a car for that much money. Yeah, I guess.
I know, right? That's interesting, though. Oh, and they will hire bartenders out to you. I'd be like,
how
no,
much
get
extra
the hell out
is
of
that?
My pub.
Yeah, seriously.
Right?
I want to mix my own fucking drinks. Get out of my pub.
Yeah, you don't make them strong enough. My pub. Get out.
My pub.
My pub.
That's right.
My lovely inflatable pub. That didn't rhyme. Never mind.
As you can tell, it's been a long-ass week, folks. We apologize. We would apologize, but we're probably not going to. Anyway, it has been a long week, though. And the change of the season, the energy shift and the change of the season wreaks havoc on me. I have been so scattered. I walk up to my altar and I pray my prayers and I do my thing. And again, I'm back to that moment where it just feels like I'm going through the motions. And, I'm like, I'm trying to be devoted. I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to do. And sometimes I just don't feel it. And this week, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not feeling my witch self. I'm tired.
Sorry.
I'm old.
Well, yay, weekend.
Yay, weekend.
Yay.
I'm so glad. You know, we were definitely, and we were talking about the storm, and you know, we were saying, I don't know if grocery shopping's going to happen, as it usually does tomorrow morning, because supposedly tomorrow morning we are going to get hit.
Oh my God.
I don't know how badly we're going to get hit. I don't know if it's going to be bad at all. I haven't got a clue, as I'm the first to tell you. So everything is going to be played by ear. But anytime I can get extra sleep, I am not going to complain, because I like some sleep. I like some sleep. I do.
Sleep is awesome. And you got your coffee. You can stay all snug and cozy in the house.
I know.
Pick at snacks. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Except for the fact that we don't have any snacks because we have to go out to the store and buy some. Herein lies the problem. We are low on snackage. The weather is about to be suckage. And we may or may not be able to get to the grocery store to get improvements on the snackage so that they are not suckage. But we don't know yet. We're holding our breath. I understand my Florida peeps are okay. I've had a couple of check-ins say, no, we're here, we're fine, we're alive, we're rocking, we're rolling, everybody's cool. How are you doing? I'm like, well, we're doing fine so far. Check with me tomorrow. So we'll see, like I said earlier, we'll see what the weather actually does, if it actually does anything at all.
I know it did hit Haiti really, really bad.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah. And there was quite a few people who lost their lives, so my heart goes out to them.
Yeah,
we're grateful for who didn't get damaged by it, but we also, you know, send our love out to those people. Yeah. You know, it's scary.
It is scary. Natural disasters are kind of freakish.
Yeah, right? So you ready for a Mr. Taliesin Govanen?
I am.
You are? All right, let's bring him on.
Sounds good.
Hey. How's everybody doing?
Hi, Faye.
Doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing groovy. I'm out here in my backyard lighting a fire. We're having some friends over a little later, so I'm getting the fire pit up and going ready for them, so.
Nice.
Sweet. And happy belated birthday to you.
Yes, happy.
Thank you.
Happy.
Tell
you on air.
Yeah.
Yes. Turned 46 this month.
Awesome.
Yep. Had a hellacious Virgo party. Had a bunch of people over. I wound up, somebody gave me a bottle of Jameson's Caskmates for my birthday.
Nice.
So, it was
nice.
A beautiful thing.
Very nice.
It was a very beautiful thing. I drank 2/3 of that bottle that night.
Hello.
You had a good
one. One thing I love about drinking high-quality alcohol is that it doesn't leave me hungover the next day. If I drink quality stuff, I feel fine. It's when I drink the really cheap shit that I feel like, you know, that I feel like Donald Trump's toupee just fell on me. So, you know.
Well, sis, do you want to split before we launch or what?
I sure will. Y'all have fun. I will be back in a little bit.
All right,
okay.
Girl. Yes.
Oops.
Darling,
I moved the phone.
I have been waiting to talk to you. Holy fuck nuts. I have been losing my shit. Every other week is something else. Trump's doing
this. Has your
hair
been on fire lately?
You know, I haven't gone into complete meltdown panic mode. You are, as I have told people in the past, and I will say it again tonight, this is the only person who, during an election, and I contact him every election day and say, talk me down, buddy. Talk me down. So here we are. We're a few weeks out from the election. I mean, it's less than a month.
Right.
Okay. So where are we at? What is our situation? I want to talk to you about the debate. I want to talk to you about the vice presidential debate. I want to talk to you about the upcoming debate. I want to talk about the reviews that I've been hearing about the vice presidential debate especially. So we have a lot of ground to cover. Let's start with, hello, I love you, glad to see you. And let's talk about where we are right now as far as the polls, our chances, what's happening.
Well, where we are right now, if the election were held today, Hillary Clinton would win in the neighborhood of 357 electoral votes. You only need 270 to win. So that's, you know, the numbers have rebounded incredibly well since the last debate. And to tell you the truth, I could have told you, in fact, I probably should have told you when I was on in August, watch for the polls to tighten in September for the simple reason that that's the time when Republicans will come home. Basically, the ones who are a little wary of Donald Trump earlier and weren't quite willing to commit to him have decided, oh, screw it. We've been voting for homophobic, misogynistic racists for decades now anyway. What's one more on the pile? So that's where the tightening came from. But, you know, and also part of the tightening came from the fact that there was a high number of third party and undecideds in a lot of these polls. Especially coming from the left. However, a couple of things have conspired to change all that. Number one is the fact that people are starting to realize, holy shit, there's a lot of fucking racists in this country that are willing to vote for Donald Trump. And let's face it, if you're going to vote for Trump, just call yourself a racist. If you don't wear a white hood, you're okay with handing power to people who do. So, But that's part of the Democrats coming home. And the other is that these third-party candidates, these vaunted third-party candidates that have been screaming for years, take us seriously, take us seriously, people finally said, okay, you know what, we'll take you seriously. We're going to interview you like we'll interview any presidential candidate. And they found that this crew is really not ready for prime time. From Gary Johnson, asking what's in Aleppo, possibly one of the greatest international crises going on in the Middle East right now, to Gary Johnson's inability to name a single leader. Not one. And the hell of it is that, and now this next one is a failure of not only of being a politician, but a failure of being an intelligent person. When Jill Stein decided to make hay over the fact that Gary Johnson couldn't name a single international leader that he admired, you know that if you're going to bring this up, if you're going to say, oh yeah, this other guy, he's a joke, he can't name a single leader, you should know that the next question from anybody, not even a reporter, just anybody, is going to be, okay, what national leaders, international leaders, do you admire? She couldn't name one. This is after she brings up Gary Johnson's flub. And, you know, again, it's like, you know, it's kind of like if I'm going to rib you for not knowing, you know, the names of all the supporting cast on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, I better be able to name one of them myself. It's just simple human nature. And she completely flubbed on that. And the fact also that that stuff floating out about Jill Stein wanting to protect our children from the dangers of Wi-Fi, that was something that went viral there for a bit. I mean, it just proves that this gang is so not ready for prime time. And that too is causing people to come back home to the Democrats, because there's a small group of people who are willing to say, I am such a fragile flower, I'm going to waste my vote on a third party candidate just to throw a temper tantrum. But a lot of people aren't like that. A lot of people want to convince themselves that these third party people could win if there could be a fire lit under their campaign or something. And when they see them just so obviously fuck up like this, it just completely destroys any ability to pretend that they might have had. So that also is driving people to come home. And this is great news for Hillary Clinton, bad news for Donald Trump, because as long as there was a large number of third party and undecideds, he always could have held on to his pipe dream of there being a vast reserve of white racists who just haven't bothered to vote in the last 20, 30 years, who could come out and hand him the election. That's really showing, like, in regions where these type of voters would live, they're not seeing a spike in voter rolls. It's just not happening. So, I mean, every day that goes by and every time that that number of undecided slash third party voters ticks down lower and his numbers don't get better, then that's just yet another nail in the coffin of the Donald Trump campaign. So,
right.
Well, but yes, it was going to tighten, but then after the debates happened, it's back to where it should be, and it's only getting better from here. The vice presidential debate, those vice presidential debates never move numbers in polls. This one didn't. All it really did was, you know, remind people that even Donald Trump's own vice presidential candidate can't defend his fucking bullshit. So it's, I mean, it's, and then we have Sunday's debate coming up, which is a town hall format, which, let me tell you, if you thought Donald Trump struggled in the standard debate format, the town hall format is just going to be murderous to him. Because here he's going to be getting because he's going to be getting questions from average people, and because you know that's how town hall stuff is. There's a moderator, but the questions are actually asked by a pool of quote unquote undecided voters. Of course, I usually say at this point, if you're an undecided, if you can't see the difference between these two candidates by now, then you probably have difficulty operating your doorknob to leave. So I don't know how undecided these voters really are. But and the thing is that you think, you know, TV loves a spectacle, right? And you just know that the first question Donald Trump gets is either going to be from someone who's Latino or a woman, or better yet, a Latina, Hispanic woman. That would just be perfect for him to have to face one of these people. And how he, you know, I mean, I remember back in 1992, with the debate between Bill Clinton, Ross Perot, and George H.W. Bush, Poppy Bush, Bush the Elder, when George H.W. Bush got a question from somebody about the economy and how it's hurt them, you know, he gave his answer, and then he glanced at his watch, kind of like, is this thing over yet? Whereas Bill Clinton walked towards the woman, engaged her with direct eye contact, addressed her story specifically, said his famous line, "I feel your pain," and then gave a substantive answer, but his body language told the story. Now, Donald Trump hasn't had to mix with the plebs for a very, very long, if he ever has had to mix with the plebs.
Right.
And the last time he had to mix with the plebs was probably when he was doing Non-Celebrity Apprentice, you know? And
that's right.
You get these people coming out and saying, hey, you know what? My best friend is a Muslim, and he's been in this country his family's been in this country for 10 generations, and yet you say that if they leave the country, you might not let them come back in. What the hell is up with that? And how he answers these questions face-to-face with the very people who are going to be affected by him, it's just going to bury him. It's absolutely – and Hillary Clinton's been doing one-on-ones with people since the campaign started. She knows how to talk to people. She knows how to engage people. She's learned from Bill how to make everybody there feel like they're the only person in the room. Even though she wasn't a natural, you know, a natural glad-handing campaigner, she's learned a lot in the past 20-some years. And I think she's just going to absolutely bury them. She's going to look at an older woman and talk about grandkids and talk about family, and she's just going to nail it home. And that's the big thing about these debates, is that one of the reasons why her numbers rebounded so well after that first debate is because she was able to take the media-derived narrative that started in the right-wing media and has become a part of the horse race journalism-obsessed traditional corporate media, and basically she's able to basically destroy the edifice that's been built around her of this cold, technocratic, ambitious, you know, mafia boss type thing, and she's able to come across as just a regular, everyday person who happens to have a shit ton of experience. And the more that she can show people that she, you know, that she is the most phenomenally qualified person to run for the presidency in any of our lifetimes, that she has real policy proposals, and she's not this strange built-up caricature of a Bond villain, that helps her. Whereas the debates don't help Donald Trump because the media narrative that they've been trying to build up to prop up the whole horse race type thing is they've been trying to treat him as Republican nominee, not as the closest flirtation to outright fascism that this country has ever had, but Republican nominee, generic Republican nominee. And then when people see him perform and realize, no, this guy is really not ready for prime time. He's not a standard Republican nominee. He's a bullying, bragger, blowhard, homophobic shit given. That, you know, that is, that also hurts him with that small slice of undecideds. So, I mean, these debates play to all of Hillary's strengths, none of Donald Trump's strengths. I mean, it's, you know, you're just going to see. I predict on Sunday, if Donald Trump actually goes through with it, you are going to see a drubbing the likes of which you haven't seen. Probably the likes of which you haven't seen since Batman took down Bane in Dark Knight Rises. So,
very good analogy. I like that. I like that a lot. So, in essence, what you're saying is I shouldn't get too bent out of shape if the polls, for whatever reason, tick in either direction. Because, there's been so much back and forth. First, it was even, and then it was Hillary up by a couple of points, and then it was Donald Trump up by a couple of points, and then it's now like she's got a 5 to 6 point lead. I'm amazed that Trump even has that many supporters. We did this whole conversation about the basket of deplorables, and quite frankly, half is an understatement by a lot.
Right. Well, you know, and also the thing to remember, what have I told you about national polls for years now? They're meaningless.
They go down.
And they're essentially meaningless. You've got to look at the states. When you take a look at the states, Hillary is leading in enough states. I mean, she could lose Iowa and Ohio and still walk away with the election. She could lose Ohio and Florida and still win the election. Because she's winning in the states where she's winning, in places like Colorado and Virginia and especially Pennsylvania this year, she's just walking away with it. Pennsylvania's not close. It never has been close. And now she's leading by 10 in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
She's leading in Michigan. She's leading in Wisconsin. She's leading in Colorado. And that's just the thing. Without any of these states, if you just take the states that normally trend Democratic in elections, Democrats start out with 257 electoral votes. They need 13 to win. So basically, Hillary could lose Pennsylvania, Florida, and Ohio, and as long as she picks up Virginia, she still wins. I mean, it's just the electoral advantage that Democrats have just off of demographics, especially in a year where they've chosen a nominee who basically takes every single demographic advantage that the Democrats have and doubles it. Because the people that are pushing the Democrats over the top are black voters and single women voters and Latino voters and Asian voters and just all this stuff. They pick somebody who couldn't appeal. I mean, literally, Donald Trump is on track to get the lowest amount of the Latino vote in the country's history for the Republican Party. So it's
wow.
And they're the fastest growing demographic in the U.S. in terms of the number of voters, too.
That's amazing because, I mean, you keep hearing the bluster and the bluster and the bluster. I mean, even the bluster after the first debate was, we had a great night, we won, we did fantastic. I mean, he had declared himself the winner the minute he walked off the stage, and it's like, did you not hear yourself? We were all listening. It was unbelievable. I mean, even Republicans have had to admit this guy is a bit off the rails. And I know that a lot of, you know, I know the regular folks who are voting, a lot of them are voting for him because he's different. I mean, based solely on he's different.
No, well, basically, the people who vote for Donald Trump are voting because he's a racist and so are they. Even if they won't admit it, they like their little bubbles of white privilege. And that is what is keeping them, well in line there. There's no other thing about it. Don't give them any credit about, oh, he's different. No, if you've ever wondered about that person you knew who never said anything overtly racist, but always rolled their eyes whenever somebody would talk about, you know, the police shooting a black guy or something like that, they're following Trump and they'll say that they're doing it because he's different. But really, when it comes down to it, it's that Trump is a racist asshole, and so are they. So, So, I mean, let's not give people any more credit than what they're due. It just goes to show us how much farther we have to go in stamping out both cultural and systemic racism in this country.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And also the thing, too, is that Donald Trump was leaning on these unscientific Insta polls that these websites love to run that basically you can go and vote in these things 20, 30 times to vote for your person. And
right,
so these
right.
Insta, and the thing is that these are these same Insta polls during the Democratic debates where all the Bernie bros would say, look, Bernie won the debate. 80% of the people said he won the debate. Now the press is going to spin in, blah, 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 blah. And I'd say these aren't scientific polls. These are easily to manipulate. And they're like, oh, you're just saying that because you lost and all that. But now the Trump people are doing the same thing, and it's the same result. Unscientific mm-hmm. polls meant to drive their clickbait. It's nothing more than clickbait. The more time you reload that page so you can vote in the poll again, the more hits that website gets on their web counter and the more money they can charge for their ads. So it's that simple. When you look at the scientific debates that were done in the days after the debate, it wasn't even close. It was just, you know, ridiculously lopsided. Even if you know, you take all the people who thought Hillary won the debate, combine them with all of the people who said they weren't sure if anybody won the debate, and pretty much the consensus was that like 78% of the people said, yeah, well, definitely Trump didn't definitely win. Whether they're willing to admit Hillary won or not, they'll all agree that Trump definitely did not win. He got his ass handed to him, and just plain and simple. So,
well, you know, here's the thing that makes me nervous, though. Anybody who was watching the debate between John Kerry and George W. Bush obviously saw that Kerry won, and Bush mm-hmm. still wound up winning, which is really nerve-wracking.
Well, debates tend not to move the polls a whole lot historically. The fact that Hillary Clinton got such a huge bounce out of this debate is actually very atypical. But that's because of the volatility of the election, and it's also because of the large number of undecideds and third parties, voters that are still around that normally aren't this time. But the third party and undecideds are trending downwards. They always fade in the stretch, and they're doing it again. It's just that this is a very atypical primary season leading to an atypical general election, but still the end result is that Hillary's got a handle on this. She's never not had a handle on it. The worst that 538's election predictor ever had her at was only a 55% chance of winning the presidency. She dipped below 50% once right after the Republican convention. But that was more of a polling aberration than Nate Silver said really shouldn't have looked like that. But pretty much, mm-hmm. you know, when the worst that your candidate's doing is only a 55% chance of winning, that's still not bad. And now it's drifting back up into the 70 and 80% range because of the fact that not only are the polls improving, but there's less time before the election and the mm-hmm. fact that and also the fact that the number of undecideds and third-party voters is going down. And the more those go down, the more these numbers are going to stabilize. I mean, it's pretty clear. The person who was, you know, in the history of modern polling, the person who's been ahead in the second week of September has pretty much gone on to win the election every single time. And there's no aberration on this one at all. Again, don't worry about the national polls. Don't worry about the horse race journalism that's going around. That's mm-hmm. meant for ratings. That's meant for site hits and clicks and papers sold. What you got to mm-hmm. do is you got to keep an eye on the states, and the swing state polls are being very, very stable. The only one that Hillary's not taking by a better margin than Barack did 4 years ago is Ohio, because Ohio's slogan is the heart of it all, which is because the brain is missing. We've got a lot of white people without college degrees who'd much rather blame immigrants and black people for their economic problems as opposed to the fact that they just never bothered to educate themselves. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I live in Ohio. I know this culture very well. But again, Ohio is no longer important. Hillary could lose Ohio and still win over 300 electoral votes because she's doing so well in other places. And when you take a look today on 538, Nate Silver has a great map up of field offices that the different candidates have. And the fact that Hillary Clinton is, even though she doesn't have as many field offices as Barack did in 2012, she's still mopping the floor with Donald Trump in campaign offices. And this is where it gets important. This is about getting out the vote. I mean, people can tell a pollster they're going to vote for Donald Trump all they want, but if election day comes and they just don't bother leaving the house, it's not going to translate into an actual vote for him, whereas the Democrats have a much better organization put together. I've seen it firsthand in the Summit County area here in Ohio. They've got a great organization of identifying Democratic voters, contacting them constantly, making sure they're engaged, and making sure they're going to be getting to the polls and getting them a ride if they need a ride and all that stuff. So,
you know what I find interesting, and I compare this to the last presidential election and when Barack was first running, I remember we were talking, you and I, and I said, I'm telling you, I think that there's a lot of people who want to vote for Barack, but because of where they live, they don't want to admit it. And that's how he took North Carolina. I have the feeling that the same thing is happening with Hillary. I think a lot of people don't want to admit that they're going to vote for her because they are surrounded by other Republicans. And they're secretly and a lot of them are Republicans. And I think a lot of them, even more than ever, you're going to see a much higher turnout of Republicans for Hillary than we've ever seen Republicans go for anybody who isn't one of their own before.
Well,
that's my theory.
Especially when you take a look at the Republican old guard that's breaking ranks with their party. I mean, this week, Michael Reagan, Ronald Reagan's son. Now, Michael Reagan was always the more conservative of Ronald Reagan's sons. He's not like Ron Reagan Jr., who was always a bit of a lefty. Michael Reagan was always much more along his dad's movement, conservative, low taxes, blah, blah, blah type ideals. And this week, Michael Reagan said that neither his dad or his mom would have voted for Trump. They'd both be voting for Hillary. George W. Bush and George W. Bush's dad, George H.W. Bush, have both signaled that they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Barbara Bush and Laura Bush and W's two daughters, all four of them are voting for Hillary Clinton. And again, that gives philosophical cover for these like Republican housewives in suburban North Carolina and other areas like that. To while they may not tell their neighbors how they're voting, that gives them the personal cover to feel okay about the fact that they're not going to vote for a Republican, probably for the first time in their lives. Because let's face it, if Barbara Bush, the grandmother of the current Republican Party, is saying, oh, my God, you can't vote for this guy, then there's a lot less reason to feel cowed into doing so.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I'm surrounded by Republicans where I work every day. And, you know, only one of them is a very vocal Trump supporter. And it's funny because this week, the gentleman said, God, I wish this guy would just shut the hell up talking about Trump. So even someone who I know is dyed-in-the-wool Republican, his daddy was, his granddaddy was, his kids will be, the whole nine yards. Although I don't know if his daughter would agree. I think his daughter is secretly going to vote the other way. My feeling is that while he would never vote for a Democrat or anyone other than a Republican, he is going to hold his nose if he pulls the lever for Trump, and he may not pull a lever at all.
Right, and that is the biggest danger for the Republican Party right now, are people who decide that they just can't vote for this guy and they're not going to vote for Hillary, so they're just not going to show up. Because there are some very, very close Senate races across the country that any drop-off of Republican turnout is just going to be a disaster for them. Like the Missouri Senate race or the North Carolina Senate race.
Absolutely.
The more Republicans who feel like they can't vote for Trump, they're not going to vote for Hillary, so they're just going to stay home, that deprives Republicans in those areas of all of those reliable Republican votes. And that's another thing, too, that, again, that's part of the advertising that Hillary's doing, reminding everybody of all the really stupid-ass stuff Trump has said and just the plain nauseating stuff that he said, basically to make it so that even if you don't vote for her, you know, again, you can just stay home. You can just choose not to vote for anybody because that will ultimately help the Democrats if a dedicated Republican voter just decides they've just got to stay the hell home and binge watch Walking Dead that day. You know, it's like,
yeah, well, you know, and I hate to say this, but in North Carolina, we have a little bit of an edge this year because, and not that you could ever call House Bill 2 an edge, because of this bill and because of what this bill has done to the hemorrhaging of money from my state, as far as concerts pulling out, businesses pulling out, people who were planning to come here who then looked to put their headquarters other places, sporting events that have been hosted here for years have pulled out because of HB2. All of this rests very squarely on the shoulders of Pat McCrory, the governor of the state. The last time I checked, Roy Cooper, who is running as the Democrat, was up over him by at least 5 points. I don't think I've seen that happen in probably 15, 20, 20 some odd years now that I've been living here. I've been living here a lot longer than that. But in the past couple of decades, I have never seen the migration. And while people may not think 5 points is such a big lead, it's
in North Carolina
really
for
stunning.
Democrats to be leading a Republican by 5 points is like 50 points in most other states. You just
pretty
don't
much.
See it.
You just don't.
Yeah.
And thank you. Yes. And that's what's happening right now. We're having this wave of new folks and younger folks and older people are past, you know, the old guard of the Republican Party who did it more out of habit than out of knowledge. A lot of those older folks have passed away. We have a lot more influx of new people, younger people, foreign people, which is awesome. We're finally, you know, North Carolina was purple and then voted Barack in, and, you know, he lost last time, but that's okay because we're looking more purple now, leaning into blue than we did even then. So,
North Carolina and Georgia are two states just to watch over the next couple of election cycles. And that's the thing, is that Ohio, because of the education standards and because of the fact that we've got so much rural in the state, is actually trending a little bit more red. But as states like North Carolina and Georgia come up to play, Ohio's going to be less important, which is good because, let me tell you, I've been born and raised in Ohio, and our politics are just goddamn schizophrenic here. It's just kind of ridiculous. I mean, literally, in, around the Cleveland and Akron and Toledo areas, you might as well be, you know, Detroit or Pittsburgh, one of these other big eastern cities. But everywhere south of Akron is just fucking West Virginia. It's just such a weird, chaotic, schizophrenic place. So that, you know, the idea of being able to build up especially building up in areas like North Carolina and Georgia that have such a engaged black community political activism based around the historic black churches. You know, what they're trying to do is combine that and actually get Latino populations that have under participated over the last couple of decades to actually get out, get registered and vote. And you combine the black and Latino votes in areas all across the South, and you're going to start seeing reliably red states flipping blue, going purple and then flipping blue, including Texas.
Yep.
Off of demographics alone, Texas could be purple in 4 years. So it's just, yeah, things are changing and it's not going well for the Republicans. Because again, a lot of these states, like in Texas, Texas has something like 3 of the top 10 biggest cities in the United States. And urban areas tend to be more liberal. They tend to be more democratic because the Republicans have been depending on this shrinking pool of white rural voters. And that's just disappearing as a demographic force, even in southern states the urban areas are starting to flex their muscles more, and you're just going to see more and more where it's the cities that are going to decide states and not the rural areas anymore.
Right. Well, let me ask you something, and this is a question I've had for a couple of weeks. You know, when this whole thing first started with Trump and people were like, no way, no way, this isn't going to happen, you know, we predicted the implosion, or a rather strong implosion, of the Republican Party. With the passage of time and the weirdness that has gone on and the continuous issues with Trump and the 3 a.m. tweets and all of that craziness, it seems as though, even though we thought it was going to implode, it really didn't, and it's just a question of they're waiting for bad gas to pass. I don't think they've learned anything from all of this. Do you think they have?
Not yet. But the thing is that Chris Ladd, my favorite, now he's an ex-Republican blogger. He used to be my favorite Republican blogger, but he quit the party over Trump. He predicted 2 years ago, in 2014, he predicted that the next nominee of the Republican Party was going to be batshit crazy. And he just modeled that off the fact that, you know, you take a look in the past, and usually the person who gets the nomination is the person in the Republican Party who came in second the last time they had a competitive primary. So, I mean, Bob Dole came in second in 1988, and then in 1996, you know, he wound up, you know, he wound up winning the nomination. John McCain came in second in 2000. He wound up getting the nomination in 2008. Mitt Romney came in second in 2008. He got the nomination in 2012. But then in 2012, the two people who came closest to Mitt Romney in votes was Ron Paul and Rick, don't Google my name, Santorum, two genuinely batshit crazy individuals. And the Republicans don't really have a good bench. They don't have anybody who's untainted by jihadist policies. They don't have anybody who's untainted by cozying up to the alt-right or the religious whack jobs. They don't have anybody who could foreseeably appeal to any block of voters in states that are handing the Democrats the presidency time and time again. And now you're starting to see some Republicans, especially the Mitt Romney-type Republicans over on Red State, the Red State .org blog. And let me tell you, if you think liberals hate Trump, go check out Red State. Those people there are vicious towards this.
Wow.
But there's more and more of them who are talking about how genuine movement conservatives are going to have to split off and form a new party, because even the conservative scholars are admitting that the Republican Party has never had a conservative movement that's been free of white nationalism and white identity politics. Starting with the fact that Barry Goldwater opposed the Civil Rights Act. That set up the Republicans as the party where you go if you're tired of the Democrats being too cozy to all these minority groups. And so even though for years Republican intellectuals used to try to fool themselves and say, oh, yeah, people are really voting for us because they want low taxes, low regulation, small government and all that, it was really the fact that people were voting for Republicans because they were the ones willing to stand up for white supremacy. And they've never had a conservative movement that's been free of the taint of white nationalist and white identity politics. And so they're realizing that if they really want to have a genuine conservative movement, they can't do it in the Republican Party, because the Republican Party has been in bed with the racists since the 60s, and there's no way they can get out of it. So you're going to start seeing more and more people who are – some of them are saying they should just take over the Libertarian Party. For a long time, I've said a libertarian is a Republican who's not a racist. But it's like there's several things they could do. They could try to form a new party. They could try to take over the libertarians. But you're going to see more and more in 4 years, the number one person in line to try to go for the nomination is going to be Ted Cruz, who isn't exactly all of that warm and cuddly when it comes to race relations himself. So really – you take a look at the Republican bench, there's no one there. There's no place they can go. They've rejected the Bushes. They rejected Jeb resoundingly. The era of neoconservative domination of the Republican Party is over. It's the party of the alt-right. It just depends on how long it's going to take the rest of the non-white supremacists to realize that their party abandoned them a long time ago.
Yeah, it is dead, and I was going to say that the party of fiscal conservancy has been taken over by the just white, just rich, just male party, and it's really insane, and it's as though that party of fiscal conservancy, and that was the basis of everything, is really gone now, and that's a shame because Republicans at several points in history actually made some sense. Not that I ever agreed with their entire platform. Back when I had a lot of respect for John McCain, I was actually very pro-McCain at one point in time many, many years ago. And then, unfortunately, he turned into Bush's lapdog, and I lost all respect for him at that point. And it made me very sad that somebody could change that much, especially having been as viciously attacked as McCain had been by Bush on the campaign trail, saying just really evil, horrendous shit. And then McCain sucked up to him anyway. And, you know, it's kind of like, dude, you were the one Republican that I felt like when you spoke, I could believe what you said. And you took that away from me. And that's really what turned me against all of the notions of a good Republican. And I use the air quotes when I say that.
Right.
So I do have distinct issues with the Republican Party as a whole right now because of, you know, I guess my little bit of hero worship kind of got dashed by that.
The era of the Bob Dole Republican is gone.
Yeah, very much
Excuse me.
I have
can't
to.
Fire.
No, you're fine.
Can't
I have
fire
to agree.
Smoke in my face. But no, yeah, and that's the thing too. You know, you need to read a book by Norm Ornstein and Leonard Mann. Ornstein and Mann. It's called "It's Even Worse Than It Looks," and in that they document step by step how the party of Eisenhower became the party of Trump. And they published this book long before Trump ever went, you know, for the nomination, but just how they went from a loyal opposition party to just a hotbed of political terrorism and policy terrorism and that sort of thing. And I mean, it's even worse than it looks. You can get it used on Amazon for like $1. It's so cheap. Pick that book up and read it if you really want to understand the self-destruction of the Republican Party, because they lay it out step by step. So that's a great book. And, you know, really, there's a great post up at Forbes right now, the Forbes website, by Chris Ladd, where he talks about how the failure of moderate Republicans, about how he voted for Mark Kirk in the Illinois Senate 6 years ago, very enthusiastically campaigned for him because Mark Kirk was running as a moderate, as a somebody who acknowledged climate change and who was less strident on abortion. And then as soon as he got to Congress, he kind of became a lapdog for Ted Cruz and the crazies. And it's mm-hmm. that's been the last force that could have saved the Republican Party. Their own moderates have chosen to not engage. They've surrendered, and they've essentially surrendered their party. So it's just one of those things where it's like after Virginia fell in the Civil War, after the Capitol, after Richmond fell, the war was over. It just took other elements of the Southern army and states a few months to figure out that it really was over. And that's the stage that the Republicans are at now. They're at the lost cause stage.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, I do have to ask your opinion on what we saw the other night on the vice presidential debate. There were a lot of interesting comments made during and after that debate. You know, it was interesting the way – and I have to tell you, quite honestly, I like Tim Kaine, but I found him to be a little bit over the top with the constant interruption.
You have to understand, Tim McCain had a simple job. He was not there to win a debate, because even when you win a vice presidential debate, it doesn't move the numbers. It doesn't really have any impact on the base. He was not there to make himself look good. He wasn't even necessarily there to make Hillary Clinton look good. He was there to remind people what kind of a monumental asshole Donald Trump was. And his secondary goal, and his secondary goal was to make sure that everybody knew that nobody in the Republican Party could realistically defend Donald Trump, not even his own running mate. And that's the thing that, you know, even though right after the debate, people are saying, oh, yeah, Mike Pence went on style and he was more calm and cool and collected. And Tim Kaine seemed a little hyper and over the top. The thing is that the thing that everybody was talking about the next day was the fact that Mike Pence would not defend things Donald Trump said. In fact, he would deny these things about Donald Trump, which of course meant that like 10 minutes after the debate, Hillary Clinton had videos up online showing people, you know, Mike Pence said this never happened, but look, it did, and showing videotape of Donald Trump saying the very things that Mike Pence said never happened. So really, Tim McCain's job was to remind people just what kind of a loose cannon, out of control, he wackadoo nut job that Donald Trump is, and the fact that the Republican Party is enabling this guy because they won't admit just how bad he is. And he succeeded on both of those points blindingly.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did.
So
I have to
that
agree
was his
with
job.
That.
His job was not to win. His job was to remind people just how bad shit crazy Donald Trump is, and he did that perfectly.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I agree with that. On those, if those were the goals, he was monumentally successful. I do have to agree with that.
Yeah.
Do you think Mike Pence is actually the running with Trump because he's trying to figure out if he has a chance to win himself in 2020?
Well, he'll definitely be a major player in 2020. In fact, this is Pence's attempt at resurrecting his political career. Because when the year opened up, Mike Pence was looking to lose re-election as governor in Indiana, in deep red Indiana, because of the way he handled his own legalized bigotry against gays bill in Indiana. His stock is his approval ratings were dipping below 40%. There was a really good chance that he wasn't even going to survive his own primary for running for governor. So now, by leaving the governor's mansion and running with Trump instead of running for reelection, he gets to be spared the experience of losing his attempt at reelection. He gets to blame any of his losses on the fact that the top of the ticket was so poor. And then he's going to be primed to be one of the major players in 2020 when the Republicans try to find a sacrificial lamb to run against Hillary Clinton, when she runs for reelection. And so really, Mike Pence has wanted to run for president for a long time. As a matter of fact, the only reason he didn't run in the 2016 election is because he got his ass handed to him in the controversy over the Indiana legalized hate bill that he so soundly championed and then had to run away from incredibly fast. So, in many ways, he's on this ticket because he wants to resurrect his own abilities to run in 2020. Now, Pence is, as much as Donald Trump insults women, Mike Pence is a genuine danger to them. I don't think that he would be a very good candidate. I think he would be a very self-destructive candidate because he has this complete and utter inability to walk away from the stupid shit that he's done. The way he handled the hate law bill in Indiana is a great example of that. But the thing is, he's going to suck up a lot of oxygen during the primaries. And I think he's going to be made mincemeat by Ted Cruz, but in 2020. And Paul Ryan looks like he's getting ready to run in 2020, so that's going to be a big thing. But definitely, this is to resurrect Mike Pence's political career for at least 4 years. He'll get some nice consulting jobs, and he'll get to go on the air at Trump TV or whatever media venture comes out of the Trump campaign. He'll get to co-host a show with Sean Hannity or something like that. But
wow.
Yeah. Mike Pence is definitely doing better now in his career than he would have been if he had just simply decided to go down with the ship in Indiana.
Gotcha. So that makes more sense now because I will be honest, Mike Pence was not even a blip on my radar when this whole thing, started. I generally, you know, you're my pundit and my pagan pundit, and, you know, I look to you for all the things that I don't know as far as politics go, because I don't have the wherewithal to keep up with all of the players in every state. But I do want to ask, do you think this is the last we've seen of Marco Rubio?
Well, Marco Rubio has maybe a 52% chance of retaining his Senate seat. So he's, you know, he could stick around on the national scene. I don't know if he's going to be able to get anybody interested in another presidential run just because he bungled this one so spectacularly. The guy doesn't really have a firm mind for policy. And when you don't have the charisma of a Donald Trump, then you really need to be good on at least some aspect of policy. He really doesn't have either. I think he'll be the perennial choice of Republican pundits who would like to have a nice blank canvas to imprint their wishes on, like, oh, if we had somebody who was great like Marco Rubio, we would have won, even though they would completely ignore his actual performance in the primaries in order to say that. But
right.
I think his career will survive because there are some pundits who hate to be wrong, and the ones that were fluffing Rubio during the primaries are just going to write this off to being a weird year because of Trump, and then they'll keep going back to fluffing Marco. But I don't really think the guy has a spectacular career ahead of him, especially if he only squeaks back into the Senate, because a lot of people in the Senate don't like him because he made it clear how much he hated being in the Senate. So I don't know how much Republicans in the Senate are going to work with him, especially when the Democrats take the Senate back this election. Rubio is going to be marginalized even more. So,
wow. So that's kind of a done deal. It sounds like nobody will ever be able to take him seriously again from what you're describing.
No, Marco is going to be a perennial Ossaran, I think, for the Republican Party.
Wow. So I watch The Circus every week. I don't know if you're familiar with The Circus. It's a kind of a wrap-up of the week, the previous week's happenings in the presidential race. And
I've heard of it, but I have not watched it.
It's interesting. It's done by the two guys that have a show on MSNBC. Haldeman, and I cannot remember the other gentleman's name. They have a show on in the early evening, late afternoon every day. And it's, you know, it's funny because when they have these conversations, you know, they talk to their strategist, Mark McKinnon, and they have this conversation while they're doing interviews and meeting with people and watching results and watching debates and all this other stuff. They keep saying, well, you know, this is so unpredictable. We've never seen anything like this before. It's, you know, this is the most unusual year ever in politics in the presidential race, and it all hinges on the fact that Trump is running. But, you know, in looking at it in retrospect from this point backwards, it seems like it's really not that different from any other election season. Yes, Trump is the most batshit crazy that I can remember running, but it just seems like the ebbs and flows, the lies come out, and people make up their minds depending on their gut or where they are in their lives. So to
right.
me, in the overall sense in looking at it, it's really not that unusual and crazy. People love and have always loved fantastical creatures, which Trump happens to be one of. So it's like
fantastic
watching
beasts and where to find them, yes.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like watching any car crash or train crash or accident. People rubberneck. They want to hang out for a while and see how it's going to turn out. But eventually they need to get to their own destination.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think this whole interest in the whole Trump phenomenon, as they call it, I don't really think it's a phenomenon. I think it's like any other accident on the freeway. Some are more horrific than others. There's always loss of life when it's really severe. And, you know, hopefully this will finish Donald Trump as a an idea for politics going forward?
Well, unfortunately, even though Donald Trump's going to get defeated, the people who put him there in the Republican Party are going to feel emboldened and feel like it's their time to take control of the party like never before. And that's the thing, too. It's like for years, people on the left have been saying that the Republicans have been, you know, clinging to power through thinly veiled appeals to racism and homophobia, misogyny and Islamophobia. And the fact that Donald Trump has basically forced your average Republican electoral to go, well, I guess the liberals are kind of right all along. It's really only confirmed what the left has been saying about the Republican Party for years. And because you have somebody coming along who embraces all this stuff in a way that just cannot be denied. They cannot be talked around, cannot be denied. And it's just, you know, if anything, it's just going to be rather curious to see again how the intelligentsia moves on this, how many of them start moving towards some other ideal, start moving towards either a reform movement or taking over the Libertarian Party or splitting off and forming their own thing. Just because it's kind of like, you know, it's like for years somebody saying that the emperor has no clothes, and then finally even the emperor's wife has to admit that he walks around buck-ass naked. So it's kind of like, yeah, you know, it's a really curious point in politics in this country. And as somebody who studied politics for a long time, even though I'm feeling a little burned out right now, it's just fascinating to see where it's going to go. Of course, after this election's done, I am going to be taking a break from politics for a while. I'll still come on y'all show and help explain things and all that, but I'm really getting much more deeply back, working my spirituality, working my spiritual system, finding that unique balancing point between Wicca and Druidry and the world that I walk. And that's where the interesting stuff for me is going to come on. I'll still be able to come on and talk you folks off the ledges, but you hanging around my Facebook page, you're going to see a whole lot more about, funky people doing magic as opposed to funky people waving signs. So,
which I'm into, because quite frankly, you know, there's such an ridiculous amount of information and ads every 5 seconds, this one against this one against this one, that I get really burned out on it, as I'm sure most people are at this point. So I'm thinking, so my question to you before we start going to talk about the wizardry and druidry and Wicca cross intersections that you are developing, because I am very interested in that. Thank you so much. So coming up over the next less than 5 weeks, do we look to see if the needle moves anymore? Does it need to move anymore? Are we where we should be? Can everyone relax? What's the situation going to be in the next couple of weeks?
Well, you don't necessarily want to relax too much, but you don't have to worry about lighting your own hair on fire and running around or anything like that. Because that's, you know, it's like, you know, the numbers are moving where they need to move. Things are going where they need to go. We just need to keep focused and just to keep our eye on the prize and to keep focusing. Again, if you want to know where things are at, check out the 538 tracker. It's at the bottom of their page. Every time you load their page, check out their state-by-state numbers. The states are where you're going to find it. The national numbers can waver here and there, point here, point there, point around the bend. But keep an eye on the state numbers. Keep a look at the elect count. I mean, it could come down to a 2-point race and Hillary still gets over 300 electoral votes. And that's really, in the end, in our system, that's what counts, are your electoral votes. It doesn't really matter what the national popular vote count is, because we don't have a national election for president. We have 50 individual elections plus the District of Columbia. So we have 51 separate elections for president, and how those shake out is the most important thing. And like I said, when it comes right down to it, these coming up weeks, you're just going to see more of the traditional constituencies returning home, and Democrats have a built-in home field advantage because, like I said, it's like Chuck Grassley once said for the Republicans. He says, we're just not cranking out and manufacturing angry, old, bitter white guys the way we used to as a country. And that overall is not good for the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, I feel better now.
That's good.
But
and actually, I'm going to need to get moving here because I've got some people coming by for the fire, and I'll have a lot more. I'll have a lot more stuff to talk to you about next time on all kinds of fronts.
Awesome.
Yeah, I came here, talked you off the ledge, and now I'm going to go party. So.
Well, I love you. I appreciate it. I can't. You're our last guest before the actual election takes place. So I'm looking forward to that very, very much. I'm very excited about it, and I appreciate your time. As always, love you a bunch. Can't wait to talk to you about the wizardry, druidry, Wicca, Intersect. I can't wait. That's going to be really exciting, and it's going to be a great change of pace once this election is done.
Lots of fun. All righty. I will catch you next same bat time, same bat station.
Thanks, doll. Love
bye,
you.
Allison.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Did you two have a nice chat?
We did. I appreciate you. Are you ready to wrap this pup up?
Absolutely.
All right,
guys. You know what? I completely forget who our guest next week is.
Oops.
Oops. Oh, well. You guys will find out not too long after I do, probably.
I love you.
I know. I'm a goober. But
you're my goober.
We love you guys. I am. And I
you
love
are.
You. I'm going to come over there and hug you.
Okay.
Anyway, so
yes.
we're gonna wrap up and hope Taliesin enjoys his night. I didn't get to fit that in there before he skedaddled.
He skedaddled. He did.
Yeah, he skedaddled. Thank you guys for tuning in. Welcome any new listeners. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
We will see y'all next week. Look for that raffle probably tomorrow. I'm getting some positive feedback, so yay.
Awesome.
And I'm going to try. Actually, you know what? I think I'm going to start releasing the Angry Cauldron on Mondays.
Okay.
Because weekends seem to kind of squish up for me. So
right,
look for that
love.
Monday. Brand new one. But
yay.
We love you guys.
Yep.
And we'll
love
talk
you.
To you soon. Be
See
safe.
You next week. Yes, please be
Bye.
Safe. Bye. Bye.
Absolutely. Bye.